The dead cry out. Interior, the Nicolisa, night. An old passenger ferry that has seen better days. The lights flicker as the cabin rocks from side to side on the Irish Sea. Rain and waves pound the glass on the other side. A television mounted on the corner shows the Irish news broadcast. Flickering images of a refugee crisis elsewhere in the world. The signal fades and the image is lost. A young woman, Amanda Devlin, 30s, stares at her reflection in the window as it vanishes and reappears in the flickering moonlight, like twins passing in dead space. Amanda notices a passenger, who we will come to know as Danny, mid to late 30s, asleep, with earphones in his ears. Interior lecture hall, night, flashback. Only a few students fill an old lecture hall. It is a room that looks like it has stood for 100 years. Big doors with clanking locks, the kind of room that's impossible to escape from unnoticed. Amanda, dressed in a smart casual attire, is standing before them as she delivers a lecture. A large screen behind her filled with violent illustrations of the Cromwellian invasion of Ireland. She sees a student listening to something on his laptop with earphones. Amanda. Sir Francis Drake, fresh from the Rathlin Island massacre, where 600 men, women and children were slaughtered, now sets his sights on Grace O'Malley on the west coast. Another slide features a depiction of the massacre. He shed blood on Tory Island. The next slide appears. Here he is again on Achill, and again on Inishbofin. Each island a haven for piracy and stolen artifacts. Working his way around the coast until he came to... A loud mechanical clanking sound indicates a middle-aged Irish professor, John McCabe, entering through the large door and slipping into a seat at the back of the hall. The screen features a depiction of an island. The island of High Brazil, the mythical vanishing island far into the Atlantic, a myth encouraged by Grace O'Malley to hide herself from Drake. McCabe is also fascinated. She brings up a controversial photograph, violent and disturbing. People squirm in their seats at the sight of it. We know it as Black Cross, where in 1575, Drake murdered 24 innocent women to find O'Malley. The illustration depicts women drowning at the hands of Drake on the shores of the island. He never did find her. The women died that day to protect their queen, buried at the site of O'Malley's treasure. She almost takes pleasure in their discomfort as she scans the room. She takes a heavy book. Amanda notices McCabe and some of the students turn to see him. Amanda drops the book in front of the student. It makes a deafening sound and the student jumps. If you believe in stories. The student embarrassingly closes his laptop, which indeed had a film playing. The records are vague about this, you see. And that's the whole point. History chose to forget these people. The group return their attention to the slides. Be it real and firm land, kept hidden by God, as an earthly paradise, or else some illusion from the airy clouds appearing on the surface of the sea, or the craft of evil spirits. Amanda shakes off the reverie of the tale. Roderick O'Flaherty. Later. Students shuffle out of the lecture hall. Amanda checks her phone as though expecting someone. McCabe. Find the women, find the treasure. Is that right? Amanda turns from the phone to see the professor approach. How about just find the women? Isn't that enough? They love the pirate stories. Nick is a better storyteller than I am. Nick Mason. He's the course leader. I know who he is. I appointed him to the job. The job you're doing, it seems. It's McCabe, isn't it? Nick is on leave. Is that what he told you? Is there something I can help you with? I'm running late. Amanda finishes her packing. No, you've been more than helpful. Amanda smiles and takes her things to leave. McCabe. Why Black Cross? Amanda stops. Why not Rathlin Island? Why not somewhere more... glamorous? McCabe smirks, realizing he has struck a nerve. She leaves. McCabe is left with quiet admiration on his face. Interior Amanda's office, university. Amanda's office is cluttered with books on history and photographs of mountains and far-off lands, the belongings of someone who has travelled the world and seen a lifetime of adventure. A picture of Amanda stands with a young man of similar age that we will come to know as Nick, a forgotten set of rosary beads buried underneath papers.
"You work late, like your brother."
McCabe lets himself in. "He's not my brother." McCabe looks around and sees the maps and the diagrams. He's fascinated by the pictures.
"Is that..."
"Amanda, the Urals. Nick was caught in a rock slide 2 days after that was taken, carried himself back to civilization with a cracked skull." If this is about Nick wandering off, I wouldn't worry. Nick has a way of finding his way home.
"I worry because I know where he went."
"You know where he went too." A map on the wall shows the island of High Brazil, Black Cross. Later, McCabe is looking at the family picture of Nick and Amanda. Amanda is packing her bag.
"I blame myself for letting him go in the first place, but I thought the time away might do him some good after... well..."
Amanda understands.
"I can't imagine what losing a loved one must feel like. But Nick, he didn't recover from it, did he?"
"You never recover."
"I know this isn't a conversation you imagined having this late."
"Ellen was my sister. She was his wife. We were family for a while, and then it was like we weren't all of a sudden. He disappeared into his research." She puts a large bound document into her bag on the table. Amanda's PhD thesis.
"Well, tell me about your research."
"Post-Civil War propaganda in England."
"I remember now. Nick told me great things. The campaign of misinformation to unify the country against a common enemy.
Where I come from, we call it fake news." McCabe takes her thesis. Amanda is clearly put out.
"You have a date for your defence?"
She shakes her head.
"I'll take care of it."
"I'll be fine. I have a good supervisor." Amanda takes the thesis back.
"Who lets you cover his classes?"
"Whatever you're looking for, I can't help you." Amanda takes her bag and coat, ready to leave.
"The hardest question I got asked in my defence was, why?
Why did I do the research? A lot of people just can't answer that one." She stops again. "You know where he is. I suggest you make some calls."
"I'll do that." He stands up. "Cromwellian propaganda and Black Cross.
That's some combination." Nobody else wanted to talk about it. He leaves. She sees the picture of Nick and what looks like Amanda taken during better times. The life of an adventurer. Exterior University, Dublin. Amanda is leaving the university when McCabe sees her outside.
"I think you've lost your edge."
She's surprised to find McCabe nearby. Surprised and insulted.
"Excuse me?"
"You're not the same woman from those pictures."
Amanda doesn't know how to respond.
"Maybe one day you'll tell me the real reasons."
He turns to leave. "Because 24 women died for something." McCabe has stopped.
"And we chose to forget them."
McCabe tries to understand. "That's why I do this." McCabe nods. Amanda looks as though she's bared her soul. Interior the Nicolisa. Night. Present. The light bulb swings from left to right in the cabin. The sound of the rain is more rhythmic than before. Amanda is standing next to a priest. The priest pours himself a mug of tea from a flask. He offers the cup to Amanda, who rejects it.
"You're from the Midwest?"
"How did you know that?"
"You don't look like someone who's seen the ocean too many times." "I did a tour of America about 10 years ago."
I recognize the accent.
"You don't look too confident yourself."
"Doesn't matter how long you've been on the water. You can never be sure you'll come home alive.
The sea always wins."
The island of Black Cross is revealed in the distance. The island is illuminated by orange mist. Fires.
"What is that?"
"It started again. The culling." She takes out her smartphone and starts photographing the awesome sight. The priest pulls the zip on his coat all the way to conceal his collar. Amanda is puzzled. A voice.
Nicolisa, are you reading me?
Better get your things. We'll be arriving shortly.
This is the Nicolisa. Brendan, do you have me?
Amanda goes to the rear where Danny is now slowly gathering his belongings while waking up from his sleep. Amanda starts preparing for the elements while Danny is searching his bag. She spies engineering equipment.
So you're here for the water crisis?
Danny is surprised by the question.
Yeah. Anything I should know before I get off the boat? Avoid the tap water?
Danny maintains his seriousness. Avoid everything. Danny aggressively zips up the bag again to punctuate his point. Amanda is surprised and irritated by his cold demeanor. She too stands and prepares herself. Interior, Amanda's apartment, night, flashback. A small apartment in the heart of Dublin City. Amanda's zipping up her rucksack. McCabe, on voicemail.
You'll be staying in the local tavern. An engineer by the name of Corrigan will meet you at the harbour when you arrive.
She eyes a picture of Nick and what appears to be Amanda during better times. Gathers her belongings and readies for the adventure. Exterior, Blackross Harbour. Night, the present. The wind on the island is vicious and dangerous. The storm is raging. Danny disappears into the darkness. Amanda waits in the rain. She sees the priest unpack the supplies for one of the men at the harbour. Crates of bottled water. At the shore, Amanda is taken aback by the sight of distressed islanders, including women and children, standing in the rain with their possessions on their backs, hoping for passage to the mainland. She snaps back to reality by the barking of a vicious dog. Then a grisly and weathered man, Gerard O'Keefe, soaked to the skin, tries to control the mad dog. Amanda is clearly on edge, but Danny kneels down and silences the dog by petting it. He looks to Amanda, who is slightly embarrassed. After you. Interior, the tavern, moments later. Gerard opens the door to the rustic tavern and Amanda follows.
Your coat and your bags.
Amanda follows his orders and he leaves the room.
Deirdre, they're here.
Amanda finds a picture on the wall, a black and white picture of five children, born into hardship by their appearance, but posing stoically. Suddenly she sees a reflection of a woman behind her and she jumps. The woman is Claire O'Keefe, 30s, and a daughter of Gerard. She suffers from a limp. Which one of these children is not like the others? Amanda is taken aback by the question and studies the image again. Claire leaves with a smirk. Amanda is puzzled. Turns to Danny, who is waiting by the bar. Are they all like this?
She doesn't bite.
Amanda recomposes herself.
So do you have a name?
I guess since we're staying here.
Tell me something. Do you watch the news?
Yes.
Then you already know about this place. Neither of us are going to be staying here long enough to warrant getting to know each other.
Now she is truly surprised by his blunt persona.
Ignore Claire. A woman in her 60s, Deirdre, emerges from behind the bar and puts a register book before them. Deirdre dresses conservatively and has a wifely quality to her mannerisms. She hates that picture. Says it makes her look stupid. I keep telling her God made her look stupid. No use in blaming the camera.
Amanda has joined them at the bar and Deirdre puts a pen before her.
Your name, dear.
Gesturing to Danny. After you. Danny takes the pen, scribbles his name and then drops the pen again, grabs his bag and leaves the room. Amanda goes to sign the register and sees the name, Danny Corrigan. Her dripping wet hair smudges the ink and makes it illegible. She says to herself, Danny Corrigan. She notices Nick's signature earlier on the register. Deirdre begins the nightly ritual of locking up the tavern.
I'm sure you'll be looking to eat something. She escorts Amanda. I left some sandwiches for you in the lounge. It's a pity about the storm, otherwise you could take in some of the sights.
Interior Tavern Lounge. Gerard O'Keefe is playing soft Irish music from a fiddle by the fire. Claire is cleaning the tables in the lounge. She drops what she is doing at the sight of Amanda and leads her to a table. Amanda sits down to a platter of sandwiches and a pot of tea. Claire pours the tea.
It's nice to have an outsider.
Stops pouring and looks at the two men sitting at the bar, Paul and Dara.
It is easy to feel outnumbered here. Paul. Claire! Amanda smiles politely. She notices Claire's arms have faint bruises. Claire. Have you come to find Nick? You know Nick? Claire stops what she's doing. He's a nice man. She reveals an antique jacket button from her pocket. Paul says, Claire, we're starving over here. I was so upset when they said he'd vanished. How do you know he's vanished? Well, it was obvious. He never came back from the fort. Has anyone gone out looking for him since? Not with the storm. He left some things in his room before he left. Paul slams his hand on the bar. Christ almighty, Claire! Jared stops playing. Claire, all right. Dara smirks childishly. Claire, gesturing to Amanda. Upstairs. Claire carefully and quietly unlocks one of the bedrooms. She puts her finger to her mouth, motioning for Amanda to be silent. Amanda browses the small bedroom. A picture on the wall features an abstract image of three women. It is a grotesque picture. The title reads, Banshee. Amanda finds Nick's wallet on the table. She opens it and finds a photo of Nick with Amanda.
You'll have to forgive my boys.
Amanda is startled by Jared at the doorway.
Manners were Deirdre's department.
He studies the room.
We never got to properly know Nick. He stayed one night and then took his gear to the old fort on the far side of the island.
Claire sneaks back into the frame behind Jared with a nervous look on her face, as though she has a separate agenda to her father. Your room's ready, she says.
The storm is threatening the power, so we're going to shut down soon.
Amanda plays along. Amanda's bedroom, tavern, later. Amanda's sitting on the edge of a single bed in a quaint room. A placard on the bedside locker reads, Don't drink the tap water. She is trying to call McKay but cannot get a signal. Tired, she pulls back the bedsheets and is surprised to find a spider in the bed, scuttling away. It catches Amanda off guard. But she isn't frightened. A gust of wind outside rattles the windows and shakes her. The lights suddenly go dark. Amanda uses her phone to bring some light to the room. Later. The phone has slipped from her hand to the floor. Amanda is deep in sleep. Then the sound of crying and squealing outside, followed by barking. Amanda stirs and wakes. At the window, she sees pigs and piglets scampering around the nearby enclosure. It's a frightening sound. Then her attention shifts to the sight of a low-sized figure, Branna, hurrying into the dark. Branna catches Amanda's gaze in the window. She's grotesque in appearance. A barking dog wakes the O'Keefes downstairs. Amanda realizes she's been spotted eavesdropping. The figure flees. The next day. Amanda enters the lounge to find Danny reading the paper. She picks up the phone and dials the number in her hand. Hello, I'm looking for Professor McCabe, please. It's Amanda Devlin. Checking that Danny isn't eavesdropping. Could you tell him I called? Tell him I'm on Black Cross, and I'll be waiting for his call, thanks. Amanda checks that her coat is dry and prepares her rucksack. Deirdre is running the reception desk when Amanda finds her. Your husband said that Nick had made camp at the fort. I'd like to go see. I'm afraid that's not going to be possible. The storm has caused damage across the island. The fort just isn't safe for visitors right now. Surely there's more of a reason to check to see if he's okay. Danny appears.
You don't understand.
Amanda turns and sees him.
The roads are flooded. They won't be clear until the afternoon.
Jared appears.
Stay away from the fort.
Deirdre says, The records hall at the school is open. He used to spend a lot of time there, as I recall. Exterior the tavern. Morning. Amanda emerges from the tavern and sees people calmly going about their business. The islanders are like people trapped in a different time period. There is an avoidance of 21st century luxuries. Amanda notices a man, tall and brooding, we will come to know as Maurice O'Keefe, watching her from afar. He turns and resumes his work. Exterior coastal path, later. Amanda is traversing a coastal path when she stops to get her bearings. Then a horrible silence descends on the area. She looks around, troubled by the unsettling nature of this place. She looks for the school on her map before deciding to go north instead. Later, Amanda stops and looks around for a sense of direction. There are no people around and she is lost. Then she sees three mysterious women in a nearby cove, dressed in old black capes and hoods. Hello? She traverses down the rocks to the cove moments later. The women scatter upon seeing Amanda. No, wait, I'm looking for... But it's no use. They are gone. Amanda looks for them but can find no sign. Vanished into thin air, it would seem. She notices a very small piece of land, a distinct rock jutting out of the water not far away. It is reachable when the tide is out, but not at the moment. There's a visible cave entrance on the rock. The cave piques her interest. The school is west. Amanda is surprised to find Danny approaching with equipment in his hand. If I take you to the fort first, will that be enough? Exterior coastal path later. Amanda and Danny walk. So how long have you been working here? Long enough. At first you couldn't keep people away. Everybody wanted to help solve the case and figure out what was killing the livestock. Then they realized it was coming from the old mines. They poisoned the whole island? Not the mines. The floods are the problem. See that stream? Amanda eyes a stream of water flowing through the fields. Well, that wasn't there yesterday. The changing weather patterns are bringing in more storms, and all that water is going into the soil and bringing up zinc and cadmium and everything else that's down in those tunnels. Amanda follows the stream as it leads to a field populated by sheep. You get the picture? Hence the bottles. This place is one storm away from becoming evacuated. As they walk, the old Cromwellian fort, in all its ominous and twisted magnificence, comes into view. Nick had been exploring the cave networks underneath the fort. This way. A group of teenage boys are socializing nearby. One of the boys has a streak of dyed green hair. Danny leads Amanda down. Towards the shore at the bottom of the cliff, Amanda studies the fort, which has been destroyed through the years. Only the skeleton structure has survived. So how well did you know Nick? Amanda, scanning the area. Well enough. He was family. Not anymore. Watch your footing. Amanda and Danny arrive at the shore where the cave entrance awaits. Nick seemed to think so. She is taken aback by the rock face. She clenches her eyes shut for a moment and then composes herself. What is it? It's the patterns of the rocks. Freaks me out. They stand at the entrance of the cave. Once there was an archaeological dig here. Now the devastation caused by the storms has ruined it. Pieces of broken glass and pieces of torn canopy fabric lay on the ground. An assemblage of rocks, repeating patterns and holes in the walls of the cave, make Amanda anxious. She's overtaken by the patterns. Exterior rocky shore. Flashback. Amanda's head is sticking out of the water. She's gasping for breath and clinging to a series of rocks. Algae and dirt are coming out of the holes. It creates a series of disturbing patterns that resemble the walls of the fort. Exterior cave, present. Amanda recomposes herself and they enter. Are you sure? I told you I'm fine. Danny gets on his haunches and examines a mask in the corner of the cave. The mask features two long tusks emerging from the side, like a pig or a boar. It's a gossip's bridle for people who talk too much. Danny puts the mask down. To Connacht or to hell. Amanda emerges from the cave again. Waves crashing against the walls of the fort. Amanda ascends up and around a different path to the main fort. Interior cave, sure. Danny spies a passage leading to yet another section of the cave network. There's so many caves around these parts, he could be anywhere. Nick! Amanda is climbing up when she's distracted by a mysterious woman standing at the top of the fort. She looks as though she's about to jump off. The mysterious woman looks at Amanda. The woman is Amanda. Amanda is shocked out of her reverie to find Danny with his hand on her shoulder. Why did you run off? The doppelganger on the fort is gone, and Amanda is left puzzled. Moments later, having circled back around the fort to their starting position, Amanda hears yelling from afar. She sees a local man scolding the kid for dyeing his hair. The man is overly aggressive with the boy, and he pulls him away from the others. Amanda goes to him. "Hey," catches up. "Hey, what are you doing?" She intervenes and separates them. "You're hurting him, stop it." The man starts yelling at her in rapid fire Irish. The man is overly aggressive with Amanda as well, and Danny interjects. He speaks Irish to the farmer and calms him, while Amanda goes to the teenager to comfort him. The boy flees. "Amanda, it's time to leave." "Right." Danny takes Amanda away. She keeps her gaze on the boy. They leave the fort and walk a few more yards until they are safe. She takes a bottle of water from her bag, swallows a gulp and catches her breath. The boy and his friends pass the two. The boy looks to Amanda and sees the woman who came to his rescue. Amanda hurries to buckle her bag up again and gets on her way. "Where are you going now?" Exterior school, later. Amanda studies the tiny school, not much room for students, only a few rooms altogether. Amanda enters the school and looks around. She hears voices from a classroom and watches as the teacher, Karen, late 30s, and some of the locals are in an agitated conference. Amanda finds a room labelled Records. Amanda explores the unimpressive library, a place where reading is not held in high regard. Amanda is satisfied that this will do. Later, Amanda rifles through the different books and logs in the small room. A table sits at the centre of the room and it looks onto the schoolyard where children play. Outside, Amanda notices the boy from the fort. He's clearly shaken by the day's events and sits alone. Amanda watches as the teacher, Karen, tends to the boy. Some of the records contain old flyers and newspaper clippings. A newspaper clipping from the 1800s describes how an American mining company will be coming to hire locals on the island. She reads the date of the clipping, 1875. Someone is watching Amanda. Old mining company logs. Inside, a company map of the island. She carefully unfolds the map onto the table and compares it to her own map. Karen, the teacher, off-screen, says, "You must be here for Nick." Amanda looks to see the school teacher at the doorway, a woman a few years older than Amanda. She looks out of place among the islanders. "This is where he worked, when he wasn't out on the fort. I'm trying to piece together his last few days. Can you tell me if there are any other boxes left over from the Sedona Company? I'm hoping it might give me an idea of the places he visited." The teacher goes to the shelf. "The company were in such a hurry when they left that the islanders didn't know what hit them back then. Today, all that's left is the mining village on the west side of the island and some mine shafts. The company were the first to properly survey the island, so some of the documents were kept." She pulls down one more set of ledgers. "Mineral deposit locations. Nick was very interested in these for some reason." Amanda quickly scans them. "He was looking for quartz?" Amanda is busy with the books. She takes photographs of other documents with her phone. Karen grabs the phone from her hand and looks to the window. "That kind of technology can get you in trouble here." Amanda retrieves her phone again. "I must get back." Amanda heeds the warning and puts her phone away. Then she finds that one of the books is an old journal. Exterior nearby farm, moments later, Amanda is returning to the village when she sees a distressed woman coming from the barn. Amanda crosses to the farm to meet her halfway and finds her inconsolable. Amanda is led to the barn. Inside is a horse, dead. The woman utters an indecipherable word. "Ishke." Her husband is grieving. The woman keeps repeating the word as if possessed. "Ishke. Ishke." Amanda looks at the pools of water on the ground. Interior, tavern lounge later. "Water," Claire O'Keefe offers, putting a meal on the table. The table is populated by Dara, Paul, Danny and Jared. It means
water.